That's a huge big responsibility if someone feels wrong on those days.
Okay, welcome back from spring break. Everybody have a good bit of break, yes?
Not long enough.
So I thought we'd start with some observations here of the river in Grand Forks. As you notice, since spring break, it's been warmer weather and our snow has been melting. And you know anything about Grand Forks, we always have these spring floods with the snow because our river runs up to the north. And I always like to watch the prediction here. They have these river gauges and hydrological models that they run for the floods. And it's always interesting to see this time of year when it first starts taking off, seems to follow pretty well. And then remember what it says now, which is it's the 30, almost 38 feet. So it's not too bad here in Grand Forks because that's not the major flood stage. So hopefully they won't close, if that holds true, they won't close any of bridges or anything. So, but they have these all along the Red River. You can go for your favorite location, Fargo or other places. So, but that's the snow melting and all the water going into the river. And I think they even put in when there's rain and stuff to the models. But usually they end up always being a little bit lower than what I've seen, even with the predictions. So keep an eye on that, but we shouldn't have to sandbag or cancel class today or this year. Shoot, yeah. We got our snow days, but no flooding. Okay, remember, I don't have an assignment for you today, but you have one from before break that's due on Thursday. So this is the one to look at the MetEd correction module and try to take the test and hand in some grade for that you get on the test. So we have encourage you to go through that whole module. And has anybody looked at it? Any feedback? Yeah, what did you think?
Good.
It's pretty good. It's kind of well done. They take a lot of time and a lot of effort to do something like that, far more than I could do myself. So I think they cover the basis of everything. So so take a look at that. Hopefully it's educational. and see how well you can do on that test. And I'll try to have a test for assignment for you this on Thursday, and maybe we'll have another exam here before too long. So today I have a long lecture about hair suppression and hair suppression conceptual models. So we go through all these slides, and we kind of rooted in some of this, and we gave you the background, hopefully to understand these conceptual models and what we think different ways you can suppress hair. And of course, I've got a couple of pictures of the hailstones here from a couple of the people from WMI on the left, and then a nice hair swath on the right. So these locations of the hair are pretty confined, very narrow locations. So, but that's the main objective for the North Dakota project, is to suppress the hail and to enhance the rain as a secondary objective. So I got lots of pictures of hail in here. I guess I'll start with the biggest hailstone that they have, I guess the world record in South Dakota. So they used to do a lot of hair suppression modification in South Dakota, and not so much anymore, but it's very analogous to the storms you get in North Dakota. So 8 inches, almost 2 pounds, and it occurred in 2010, so not that long ago. And you can see all the facets of the hair with the kind of the points going out from it. So how in the world can we get such a big hailstone? And I give you a source if you want to go look at that. So the main thing is that hail forms by Ryman an ice crystal over an extended period of time. So I gave some of my pictures here of some Ryman that forms some white ice that you see on the trees, you know, from super cool fog. And I see we had some fog last night in Fargo from like 2 to 3, by midnight to 3 a.m. So my graduate students confirmed that it was very fog. So if you get super cool fog, you can have the droplets condense and form and rime on the trees. So in a similar way, you can have riming on ice crystals, but it has to be a long extended period of time. And it needs to get this extended period of time, remain in the cloud to accumulate the supercooled liquid water. So the liquid water is what rimes onto the ice crystal. So the hair particle remains in a sustained updraft in order to have the necessary time to grow. So basically, you just got to sustain it in this updraft with this water, super cool water to collect on it. So I think that's just having big updrafts and big thunderstorms will produce these large hail particles with for that. So we talked before about terminal velocity. So this is the terminal velocity with respect to the diameter. And you see you got meters per second. So, you know, we get up there at 50, 60 meters per second. That's like the speed of an airplane, right? So I guess I wasn't in it, but there was a couple storms that we had with the Citation that they got in like 20 meter per second updrafts. So that was pretty nice. I wasn't on that one. There was another one in Oklahoma that they did. So that's when we don't try to get into these updrafts, but you can have these 10, 20 meter per second and even higher to sustain these big hailstorms. So idea is that they just stay up there and above the peak in the updraft. Before they thought they would kind of cycle between ups and downs, but the idea now is it just stays in a big updraft for a long period and accumulates a lot of liquid water. Pop up if you have any questions. So we have a plot here showing updraft speed on the x-axis with height. And this is just a sketch, a diagram to keep in mind. And the line here is the updraft. So it steadily rises till you get to a maximum updraft, and then you have a decrease in that updraft. So, and in this above this maximum updraft region is where you get the hail to form in the storms. So, structure of updrafts, and it's got to be a big convective storm to generate these updrafts. So the formation, the hailstones will grow in these updrafts. But as it grows, it falls to a region of higher updrafts where it remains in balance with terminal velocity. So it keeps growing, growing, but then it needs to fall, and you have to have a balance then between how heavy the stone is that gives the downward terminal velocity and how much the updraft in that storm is. So if you have for unsuccessful hail formation, you need to have the hailstone be below that maximum updraft. And then as it grows, it cannot remain in the supercooled water and it will fall down. So it doesn't stay suspended and it will fall out of that updraft. Okay. So it's the upper part of the storms. So these large hailstones, like this one from Nebraska, require large updrafts and supercooled liquid water in the upper parts of the storm, and a few ice particles in the upper part of the storm. So can anybody guess now? We talked about supercooled water, right? So if we require large updrafts, supercooled water, ice particles, which one do you think we target to try to suppress the hail? You want to take a guess? Yeah, super cold water. The updrafts are dynamic forcing. You can't change. It has to do with that thermal rising and the dynamics of the storm. And if there's a lot of some ice nuclei, you can't really suppress the formation of the ice crystals once the temperature gets cold enough. But we can target the supercooled water, and we do that with the ice nuclei, right? So get rid of that supercooled water. So I'd like to go through a set of how the hail forms with these sort of diagrams on here that I got from Mike Pell from last year. Kind of a simplified view of the storm. And one of the main things is you have these kind of development zone here. Okay, this is where the storm is developing. You get the initial updrafts, they're kind of growing. And then back here, you got the higher updrafts, where you got the hail growth zone, where you got the big updraft velocities. Kind of, and then sometimes you have this overshooting top. This is the tropopause height here at the top of the storm. And then the rain on this kind of the backside of the storm. So it's that developing zone that's really important. So another kind of view of this with the updrafts and downdrafts. So remember that my little video from earlier when I had the Saudis there, we're flying around and we kind of were up in the upper part of the storm. And we came through this region between the updrafts and the downdrafts. Okay, so that's where you get that big difference because you have the velocity. We usually call that the kind of the backside of the storm. So, you know, here's kind of the front. If the storm kind of, particularly ones around here, they move from west to east. So this would be the east side of the storm, and the west side is on the back side here as it moves across. And so the larger particles stay high longer, grow rapidly in the supercooled water. So they can grow up into these in these updraft regions. And so then when they fall out, they are big and they could fall down as big hail. And the tops can get up to minus 40, 40,000 feet, you know, go up to the tropopause. And, you know, you got the depiction of the embryo growth here with the supercooled water. So these embryos, we call them hail embryos in the updrafts here. They encounter the water and water grades freezes slowly onto to the hailstorm. And so you can see it's really interesting. Sometimes people correct these stones and cut them apart to see the different parts of the storm, the ice that forms on the hailstorm. So you got an embryo, usually crowned by this clear ice and water-grazed ice then that gets into this updraft where you have wet growth of the droplets create this clear ice. It's kind of like icing on your aircraft wings. So you got lots of super cold water. You get some clear ice grays on the hailstone. So if the hailstone falls into regions with less super cold water, which cannot freeze on impact, it's more like a dry growth. And it's cloudier. So, you know, wet growth is when you got lots of super cooled water, and then you get this whitish type of growth. And that's what you can actually see when you cut the hailstones apart, is how thick these are with the clear and cloudy ice crystals. And you can actually see that on there. Aircraft wings sometimes, if you got clear ice or cloudy ice, that freezes. So dry growth and clear growth. Let's see here. We got dry growth, super cold water, droplets freeze on impact. The ice is cloudy and light because of the tiny cracks and crevices between that which contain air. So a little bit lower droplet concentrations, you can get these air pockets in there, as opposed to a nice solid clear, like in your, if you have ice cubes you make in your freezer, that usually freezes nice and clear for that. So, because there's a lot of water, it just all freezes and crystallizes and you get this clear growth. But here you can have the dry and cloudy formation of the ice. So, you know, your clear ice crust is usually higher in the clouds right here. With your cloudy growth further down, because that's the higher liquid water content is higher up. I guess that's the main point of this slide. And I think this is, you know, talking a little bit about the if you can go through these phases of the higher, lower ones, you can get these rings that form in the hailstones. And that's how they can kind of see if it's just one big updraft, you kind of have just two regions. But if you get a lot of rings, kind of indicates that it goes between different regions of high and low liquid water. But it's usually probably just different layers in the clouds can form that too. And then of course, after the hail grows, it falls out. So, you know, you can encompass these different regions, different areas, but it's all gotta be supported by an updraft. And then once it falls, it can melt. before it reaches the ground. And if you want to see something really cool, the melting, like a really warm place like Saudi Arabia or some desert places, they can have hail. And it's really interesting to see the hail shafts or the hail lines in the sand. You know, it's really hot, but they can get very big storms. They just don't occur very often. But that's always, I should put a picture of that in here. So it's just the sustained updrafts, different types of growth between the wet and dry. So you can think of the questions there. So any questions? Does that make sense? Just the concepts of different types of liquid water that go into the forming different clear and more white type of ice growth. White is where you have less liquid water, more air in the droplets or in the hailstorm. So let's talk with that background about hail growth and how hail forms. A little bit about suppression. How can we suppress the hail? Not much done with this until the 1960s. And then there was a big experiment in Russia, claiming a lot of success in this. And then there was a program started by the National Hail Research Experiment in the US. And here's another picture of a hailstorm. So is this one, have you noticed it goes bigger or smaller? Has it been seen these?
That's it.
Get smaller. Yeah, I started with the big one first, then we go smaller. Here's a little bit smaller one. So the Soviets, they utilize artillery shells and targeted with radar and tried to suppress the hail. You know, there were many questions about how the operations were carried out and how the statistics were reported. So, you know, they reported results, but it wasn't very clear what they exactly did. So, this is the US one, the National Hail Research Experiment. Tried to duplicate these results. You would think that usually when people and scientists report results, it's easily duplicated and we do that all the time, right? So a lot of times when you try to duplicate results, even major results, sorry. So there's been a lot of studies in the last 10 or 15 years about trying to duplicate scientific results. And a lot of times they don't come and are verified, particularly in like biomedics and other fields. So, you know, you have to look at a lot of studies to really have a conclusion, which are called like meta studies that people look at. But when they try to duplicate these, a lot of times the number of things are different because they don't report everything. Seeding material, matter in which it was dispersed. However, the end result was that it was a failure to try to reproduce the Russian results with this experiment. And it's really hard because hail is such a episodic, it doesn't occur very often. So it's really hard to study in a natural
environment. You don't, again, know what the storm would have done if you didn't intercede on the suppression of it. And it's very rare event, so it's hard to get a lot of statistics. So we still want to talk about conceptual models and how we can think about modifying the hail. Why does it cause damage? What might be done to reduce the hail damage? So I got a couple of pictures here. What's the main thing that causes one issue with the damage from the hail? Is all hail the same? What's the thing that I've been, these hailstones, they go, you got 8 inches, 5 inch ones, 3 inch. I think they cause the same damage. These are, so this windshield is broken with these big hailstones. So, right, because they're big, massive, you know, 2 pounds, a pound. So if you, the hail is smaller, the materials, the roughs can withstand that a lot easier, right? So it's mainly the size and the weight of the stone, hailstone, that causes the damage. So so what type of damage? You can have cars. What other major type of damage do you have?
Crops.
Crops. So the crops get pushed down. You can't harvest the crops like wheat.
Winter rice? But they haven't been to hailstone, but done that?
I haven't heard of any that the wind turbines, but they could. But what's the other residential or commercial in cities like Calgary? Yeah, the roofs. So the roofs get damaged, the shingles and stuff. So, and there's a little secret that they can make roofs that won't get damaged by the hail. They're just more costly. So you can think about it, and people are starting using building codes to try to get better roof it. Say that a little bit louder.
There's another certain designs like cars and buildings and fields that might drop on.
Yeah, the crops get damaged because usually you push down the fields, right? The crops are the because they have to grow up and then they can't harvest them. It's the main understanding that's I. And of course, they have insurance for the crops. So one thing that you can look at actually to assess some damage is the amount of insurance claims that people have because of the hail. So if you ever want to make a whole lot of money, I'll tell you my idea about hail and want to make a $100 million company. You want to spend 10 years, then you can come back and donate some money to the university if I tell you the idea. So, yeah, so you got to go and do it. But so after class, I could tell you how to make some money with a company to help mitigate the cost of hail. So in a way, we want to talk a little bit about conceptual models of hail.
and it's five basic concepts of how we might suppress hail. Complete glaciation of the cloud water. Competing embryos, also called beneficial competition. I should put that underneath there. Trajectory lowering, promotion of coalescence, and dynamic effects. And we'll go through and talk about each one of these in turn about how you might use these concepts to eliminate the hail. But why don't we take a little break here and I can show you, we can stretch out, I can drink my water. I have a drink of water. And tell you a story. It's when we did research, Fry, and I got into hail about, I think myself only once or twice with our research aircraft. Has anybody heard of the T-28 from South Dakota? It's a research aircraft that was armored. Yes. So that operated Andy Detweyer. That's a adjunct here. He worked a lot with that aircraft. We've been trying to pursue a replacement aircraft for the T-28 because it was the only aircraft that could actually penetrate into the hail that was up to 3 inches in diameter. So, you know, with our Citation, I was all excited. I said, this is something of interest. We got any hail. And I first told Mike Pellet about 20 years ago. I said, and then he goes, what were you doing there? What happened to the airplane? Because we were concerned about the bills to fix all the damage from windshields and stuff on the aircraft. So you have to armor the aircraft. They tried to get for a while they were trying to have a modified A-10. Have you heard of the A-10s that the Air Force runs, right? Or ground support or attack drones. So they got a pretty robust aircraft and they're gonna armor that and protect the air, the engine intakes. And they started working on it. They got one identified, but kind of the problem was that they wanted a Navy research lab in Monterey to operate the airplane, but it was a Air Force airplane. So the airworthiness became an issue. So, you know, who's going to do to make sure that this is airworthy and certify that? And the Navy said, well, we don't certify individual airplanes. And this is the Air Force's job. And then the Air Force said, well, you're going to operate it. You guys got to be the one that certifies it. So no one wanted to do that. With the military aircraft. So that kind of became an issue that they couldn't really resolve to get the certification, and just became very, very expensive. So we were looking at some other aircraft to try to do that too, but it will be an expensive platform that may not have a whole lot of work. Because if it's so specialized, why would it? But you could fly it for other things. Anyway, so I thought it was nice to get into the hail, but the owners of the airplanes don't think so. So we always try to avoid the hail as all airplanes do. And I'm trying to find where, okay. So here, I'll show you. I haven't showed you my videos on the back and pull up a couple of videos from, right? Have I showed you my citation videos that you take a look. Unfortunately, I haven't done too much in terms of aircraft with hail because we don't want to do that. Shows you the crowd physics one, this one from Saudi Arabia. But remember Jonathan that came here? Let's see, where is his? This is the one. Oh wait, that's that one, Into the Storm. Oh, this is a crowd one that Jonathan made. Did he show you guys this one? Let's play this one again. Okay, so this is one that Jonathan made flying on the thunderstorms for part of the projects. And there's some sound in here, but so it's kind of a combination of some videos and some pictures. So here's a aircraft, and we did a lot of winter stuff. Picture Roger Tailberry there. And then that's a famous picture of trying to get out of crowds when they all formed around you. So what type of ice was that? That's crowdy ice there. So that was what a promotional video that Jonathan made. And then we had another one. This is the one about us flying in Florida, in Titusville. Anybody know where Titusville is? Been to that airport? Should do a cross country there. Kind of probably is about. So we go down. This is what I did with the US Navy, and this is a project 2019 that we're analyzing data with our crowd physics probes on the aircraft. So, Emma and Martin trying to take care of their FIPS probe, checking out our crowd dropper probe. Gust boom on nose of the aircraft. Hurry up and get ready to go for a flight. And in Florida, we always try to watch the storms build. And they move across Florida, a lot of times the sea breeze that forms. And we can take off before the storms hit the airport. That's what we do here too. We take off before the storm gets to Grand Forks Airport, go fly the storms, and then come back and land after it went by. So, if they show a video, there's one of the flights taken off. I think it shows the whole flight from the camera. Oh yeah, this was a little bit different. We got a little gust probe there you could see before. Oh yeah, he just did the takeoff and landing. So this is what I make my students do for internship credits and stuff, make videos like show in class. And come back after the last three-hour flight. Not as long as on a P3 aircraft. So Sean Reiner's in Germany now. Kendra's in Hawaii. He knows from South Africa. Harrison's a grad student in Wyoming. Oh, Nick Gap is still around. And a bunch of other people from the Navy research group there. All right, quit the videos. All right, keep looking at my exciting videos. So, yes.
With that aircraft, are you strictly taking techniques or are you just...
No, it's all measurements, so no seating. However, now that we sold it to WMI, that does cloud seating, they did put ejectable, ejectable flares on the belly of the airplane, but not any hydroscopic flares. It wouldn't really be efficient for low-level hydroscopic seating. But since it can get up high and relatively fast, being a jet, it's a slow jet, but compared to small airplanes, it's relatively quick to go places. So we hope to use it in upcoming projects. But we can also do tandem flights. So we've done that before where you do a flight of two aircraft. That's really interesting. So you have one aircraft turn off the transponder, and you have one follow the other aircraft. So we can do that so that the other aircraft can see, and then we can measure. Or a lot of times we would just intercept the seating plumes, either being behind it or above the aircraft. But it works better that way than trying to seed on the same aircraft. However, we put cloud microphysics codes on the seating aircraft too, so you can see that. Sometimes you do seed and you do measurements. Depends on what the program is about. But it's more efficient sometimes to get the measurements if you're already seeding and you don't know what's there. Okay. Slideshow. Sorry, I gotta go back and get to where I was. Let me go down here to the concepts and hide my remember five concepts we'll talk about in general. More specifically. So complete glaciation of liquid water. That means taking all the liquid water and turn it into ice. Deplete all the liquid water so that you can't rime. And so doing this, because it's such a big area, is virtually impossible to do. And particularly for super south storms. So you can't put enough material in there fast enough to eliminate all the liquid water. So it's a little bit difficult to claim that you can do a complete glacier generation, basically get rid of all the super cold water. And then I have some pictures I stole of supercells to show you, some nice pictures of the bigger thunderstorms. Competing embryos, also referred to as beneficial competition. So I think this is what WMI and Bruce Bull like to call it a little bit more. It's beneficial competition. It attempts to create more hair particles for smaller ones. The ice is split up with more particles. Hailstones travel to a greater height. And this can be also difficult, particularly with supercells. But the idea is to have more of the hail embryos, but have them smaller because the damage is by the size of the hail. Trajectory lowering, attempt to get growth started lower in the cloud below the point of maximum updraft. So remember, if you grow the hailstones lower, they'll fall and you can't grow them and sustain them. But they'll start to grow and they're not supported by the updrafts and they'll fall. So this is trajectory lowering of the storm. So you want to get it to rain and get these hail stones to fall out, and maybe they'll be small enough to melt and form rain. So that's a trajectory lowering. Promotion of coalescence. Attempt to have the raindrops fall out of the cloud at lower elevations in the cloud, depleting the liquid water in the cloud in upper portions. So promote coalescence. So that would be done with like hydroscopic flares. And so one of the things they're trying now is a lot of times they want to lower trajectories, but if you want to promote coalescence, you could also use some hydroscopic seeding, get some big particles to get the coalescence going. Dynamic effects, it's a type of dynamic seeding that was discussed in the case of precipitation augmentation. One approach is to try to weaken these updrafts early in the life cycle. So remember, it's super cool water and then there's these updrafts. So you can try to weaken these a little bit. Another approach is to encourage growth in regions that will cut off moisture supply. So the indraft regions where moisture comes in. So dynamic effects are not targeted too much in the operations. So I spent a lot of time this morning revising and summarizing the hail suppression models. So this is a picture or a diagram that Bruce Bull likes to use. I'm trying to get my mouse. There's my mouse. I should make my mouse bigger. So I went through this. This is kind of summarizing the beneficial competition or embryo. I hate to name things two different things for you. Early rainout, trajectory rolling, promotion of coalescence, and it skips this dynamic effects because people really don't seed to try to promote dynamics. If it happens, it would come kind of unintentionally. So this is again your normal storm system where you got this main updraft region here, and then you have the rain falling out. on the backside or right side of the storm. You have these developing cumulus clouds at the beginning of the system. And typically, we've in here the region of cloud seeding. So you see it over here, you don't see it in the big updrafts. Okay, because there you have the hail already formed. It's gonna damage your airplane. It's a hard place to get into. So you wanna think about these regions between, again, zero and minus 15, but it would have been colder because you need to have your AGI to be active. So minus 5 and minus 15. In that region where you don't have a lot of naturally occurring ice nuclei. And then you have your normal, I guess the way to start with this is your normal type of natural hail trajectory is in the green. Okay, so you're naturally, the hail is going to form in the upper parts of the cloud. You're going to have lots of supercooled water above minus 15. You're going to have the support of the updraft to keep it there. And so the green arrow here, the green dots, are supposed to show you what would happen with a naturally occurring storm. Okay, and you get that hail that form. The beneficial competition is the one where you would get the particles to go higher in the storm, but you're gonna have more of them. Okay, and they're gonna start earlier, be smaller, again, rain out and wait and rain as rain over here. But you see they start earlier. So you promote these formation of the embryos sooner that are smaller than the naturally occurring one. And because they're smaller, they take a different path. Early rain out, try to get to rain very quickly and not even get it to go up in there. Expand the hail, get the hail to start to form earlier, and you get rain that would fall or melt the hailstones. And the trajectory lower one is the blue, where you don't get it to go up into the high updraft regions. You keep it down below the maximum updrafts so it falls off. Okay, so that's there. And then you can also try to promote the coalescence with the purple, with the orange one. Yes.
Does the early rainout
be sort of as the glaciation of cloud water? Oh, early rainout, yeah. Let's see here, because they got different names for them.
Just want to make sure.
Yeah. So if we go back, I got the one. So competing embryos is beneficial competition. And so, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like this complete glaciogenic of the liquid, get it to rain, would be more like this, you know, trying to get all of the water to be turned into into rain very quickly, which I said is really hard to do So the early rain out, great, you know, trying to do these, I should maybe put them in the, maybe that should be one above. The two that, you know, the early rain out doesn't really work too well because you got to seed so much. So it's more of the beneficial competition is really what they think works the best. And they're trying now a little bit more with promoting the coalescence. If you do some hydroscopic seeding, or you do flares that put out both hydroscopic and so iodide. So this is the, I guess, the one diagram to try to understand and remember to try to summarize each one of them ones. And I left out any dynamic effects. So I think beneficial competition, mowing it, and promoting the coalescence. So these are the concepts of how you might do this. But it's really hard to know exactly what's going on because, like I said, without measurements throughout the crowd, you don't know what's happening back here. So even if you have your seeding aircraft and your research going on, you have to, you can make your measurements here where you're seeding, but we don't have airplanes that get into the hail. Even sometimes these rain regions have a lightning, which can also be damaging, particularly turboprops and the aircraft. So it's hard to get in there. And so the idea is you use radars and models sometimes to try to understand what's happening back there, but the lack of measurements, you know, makes it hard to go through the whole chain of events from what you do at the growth of the crowd to understanding the whole process. And the statistics will just rate the, you know, the seeding that you would occur here to the rain or hail you get at the ground. But it's kind of a black box because you don't see what's happening with the embryos, how that occurs. So, and the radars a lot of times just don't scan fast enough either. So as a scientist say, you always need more measurements. So last week during spring break, I didn't go anywhere. I set up a lab and we actually measured some ground seeding generator, the aerosols that ground seeders generators produce. So, and of course, we had 3 days of measurements and we always want more because we get the measurements that kind of work and we see some interesting results on different solutions and different things, but we have only did it once. Well, you gotta get different things when the instruments are a little bit different. So we can set it up and do it one day, but really we want to make a lot of measurements. So that requires me to write a proposal and see if I can get some funding for more than a couple of days of measurements. So it takes a long time to do that. And something like the hail, you know, we have to write proposals to get airplanes that are modified to allow us to make the measurements. But there are some newer radars, fast scanning radars that can help. So maybe we'll be able to get some more observations to show the path along this. But it's hard to see the whole physical process. And if you try something new, like coalescence methods, you know, you might see one or two cases where it might show you something that says, oh, that sounds, looks like it worked well there, but you never know what would happen. And it's only a couple cases. So, okay, that's my last slide. So just focus on this. And I'll let you guys go. And we'll talk about North Dakota model and next chapter model on Thursday. You get an assignment. So work on your assignment for Thursday. Thank you.